Welcome, everybody, to the Good Question podcast. I'm Alex Racy, and here with me is John Farrell. Hi, John.
Sir, how are you?
I'm good. It's nice to be back with you. It's been a long time.
It has.
We were on hiatus, although that kind of makes it sound like it was intentional or planned, whereas we just, really what happened is we just didn't do any podcasts.
I'm afraid not.
As always, we hope this is the beginning of many in a row, but who knows? Time will tell.
I believe it could be.
I didn't have my usual intro to the podcast because the truth is I'm not 100% certain what the podcast is going to be about. I know we were talking about biography and you said that would be a great subject for a podcast because the subject of biography led us to discuss human nature and the view of the human personality, and maybe listeners will think about what they think about biography, which will lead them to their own views on human nature, but something in that neighborhood is what we're talking about.
Well, this all started at a party.
That's right.
You and I and a good friend of mine and your wife, who's also, of course, a good friend of mine. And we got to the subject of biography and you made a complaint.
Right. So maybe I should start with my complaint.
Yes.
And then you will take over and lead us where you want to go. So,
okay.
So my complaint was that I am, I guess you could say, skeptical of biography. I guess the way to make that precise is that there are sort of two things you could do in a biography. One is you could just list the events of somebody's life. You know, you could write a Martin Luther King biography and say he was born in such a place and went to this or that high school. That I don't have any skepticism about. Obviously, you can record a series of historical events. But there's another thing that biography does a lot, which is to try to explain why somebody did what they did. And that I'm skeptical about. I guess I think that you'd have to be some sort of psychological genius in order to read about another person and really understand why they made all the decisions that they did. So, you know, in the end, I guess it's just that I think people can't really do biography well if that's what they're trying to do. So that was my complaint.
Okay.
And then you thought I was totally wrong about that. So why don't you... Let's start there.
I didn't say you were totally wrong about that. I thought I was kind of partially agreeing with you. But actually, now that you've said it the way you did today, now I really do disagree with you much more.
Oh, okay.
Because I do think that we know why Martin Luther King did a lot of the things that he did. And we actually used him in our conversation as one of the examples of people that had a very meaningful life. Because you can see that they had and carried out a rather grand project, right?
Sure.
Which was, in his case, advancing civil rights in the U.S. for black people and others.
Absolutely.
And we had other examples like Gandhi and Mandela and so on. Those people have very meaningful lives, and therefore the events of their life and the historical circumstances that produced them and so on are important to know about.
Sure. That still doesn't answer the question of whether we know why they did exactly what they did. But we're going to get there.
Yeah, I do think we know, you know, why they took on those projects. I personally find that the motives behind such things are not terribly cryptic or hidden. And I think we know, for instance, things about writers. You know, why did Melville want to write Moby Dick? It's because he wanted to be a writer and make his living that way, and he wanted to become famous. I do think that most of human actions, in my account anyway, are fairly transparent in their motives.
Right. And this is why I said this was not just a topic about biography. It's about what we make of human psychology and human nature. Because
yes.
Your general point of view is that there are a fairly limited number of straightforward motivations that human beings have.
Yes.
And we can use those to explain why they do what they do. Okay, so...
So do you disagree with that?
Yes and no, unfortunately, is the answer, right? I mean, there are some straightforward things that motivate human beings. You know, they want to be happy, they want to live meaningful lives, they want to have respect and status and so on. And to some extent, that might be able to explain things that people do. But I think what it doesn't explain is any of their choices on a much more fine-grained level. And the only way to make good on that would be for us to talk about some examples. But I think you know, people have many, many choices in life. So even if we grant that Melville wanted to be famous, there are a lot of ways to try to be famous. And even if we grant that he wanted to be famous by writing a book, it doesn't explain why he wrote the book that he did and why he made the career choices he did. So I don't know, on some sufficiently granular level, maybe it kind of explains why people do what they do, but I don't think it explains their choices in any detail. And I don't think it explains their choices in the way that biographers are typically trying to explain their choices.
Well, see, there I'm getting a little more sympathetic to you, because when you do appeal to contemporary biography, in our world, which has been Freudianized to a good degree over a century, there is a kind of explanation that is current in many modern biographies, in which the biographer feels that he or she has the power to look behind the person's understanding of their own motives to find the unconscious hidden motives. And that's something that I find very implausible. So, and in addition to that, there's a more general sense that it's not even as esoteric or special as the psychoanalytic, that the biographer can produce a very, very granular account. So I think, you know, it's the granularity that is our disagreement here. So here's an account of what goes on in a recent biography of Philip Roth. And
what's this for? You're about to read us something. What's this from?
This is from the Times Literary Supplement of September 3rd, 2021.
And this is a review of a biography of Philip Roth.
That's right, by Allison Kelly. Philip Roth, A Counterlife, by Ira Nagel. And this is the second big biography of Roth to appear this year. And the first one was ill-fated, and everybody knows about it. I won't go into that. But she says about the biography, she endorses the fact that it provides a deep and profound account of Roth's psychology. And she says, she quotes the preface of the book as pronouncing the work as, quote, an effort to explore the in there and penetrate the fortress of Roth's protective self, to peer over the ramparts, to see the multifaceted person, and to uncover some of the secrets, unquote. And there is indeed extensive and illuminating discussion of Roth's formative experiences, Allison Kelly goes on to say, his private life, medical history, personality traits, emotions, traumatic events, and neuroses. And we learn later on in the review that the key to Roth's whole life and productivity and outlook was the way he was humiliated early in life by his parents and his first wife. And these produced his narcissism and various other symptoms, which are readable by psychoanalysis. So that kind of incredibly occult and detailed analysis of people's motives, I find highly implausible.
Okay, but look, I don't want you to stick me with a position which even I think is indefensible, right? So I don't. So what you're saying is there's a sort of trend, a kind of Freudian or at least inspired by Freud trend. This belief that there are these deep secret forces or motivations that cause people to do what they do. And you think that biographers do look for those, and you just think that those don't exist. It isn't that it's hard to do. It's just they're looking for something that isn't really there. And so I'll grant you that. I'm not a Freudian about psychology. But I do think that you don't have to be a Freudian or somebody misled by Freud to believe that there's a somewhat deeper level on which to explain people's actions other than just saying they wanted happiness or power or fame.
Yes.
And it's that level, I don't know what we want to call it, but it's that deeper level that I think biographers reasonably could aim at, because I think there is such a level. And that's the thing I'm skeptical that we could get at. Like, here's another example. I was trying to actually think of a biography that both you and I might have read. The only thing I could think of recently is a biographical TV series, which we both watched, which was the biographical series on Hemingway.
Oh, yes.
And people are always wondering, well, so why was Hemingway so macho, especially compared with, say, Fitzgerald and these other contemporary writers that he viewed himself as competing with? And in all these biographies, including this TV show, people will always raise this fact that for some reason, Hemingway's mother dressed him as a girl when he was a very, very young child.
Yes.
And they will always invoke this as some sort of explanation of why he was obsessed with machismo or something like that. Now, I don't know that that's the right explanation, but I do think the question's legitimate. You know, why was Hemingway pursuing this seemingly macho persona and style of writing, given that other people were not doing the same thing at the time? And it's not enough to say he wanted to be famous, because other writers wanted to be famous and they found fame in another way. So that's, I feel like, the kind of fine-grained question where it's not going to do to just cite these general human motivations as real as they are.
There are different kinds of lives, of course, that are the subjects of biographies. So, you know, when it comes to, why did somebody write a novel of a certain kind? Why did somebody have a novelistic persona of a certain kind, like Hemingway's macho stance? I mean, that's an incredibly difficult thing to explain. And there may be some personal circumstances that, you know, a biographer could possibly resort to. But, you know, and I agree with you that kind of thing is awfully hard to pin down. And so, and in fact, most of the choices that writers make in their subject matter and their ways of treating it, I mean, are not going to be explainable with reference to things that happened to them sometime. Except in a very broad sense that, you know, Melville went whaling so he could write a book about whales, right? I mean, he didn't go whaling to write a book about whales, but once he'd been on a whaling voyage and knew all about it, then that was one subject that he had available to him. So that's explanatory and not very controversial. But when you're talking about someone like, say, Lyndon Johnson, who's the subject of a very famous and really great multi-volume biography by Robert Caro, well, you know, Johnson, it may remain perennially mysterious or not fully explainable why he had the general ambitions and kind of uninhibited power-grabbing tendencies that he did. But when you see how he operated in various circumstances, you know, his motives become very clear on a large number of levels, because you can find out, you know, just what was going on in the Senate in 1956 when he was trying to pass a certain bill, and who had to vote, who might he be able to get to vote, and what might he be able to bring to bear to their on their votes. So, I mean, you can give a very, very fine-grained analysis on the basis of the practical scene that is really very explanatory.
Yeah, only... Well, look, I'm worried that example is, well, first of all, not representative of what people are trying to do in biography, and also perfectly suited to your hypothesis in a way that's not entirely fair, because because you picked an example where we know what Johnson wants, and then the question is, why did he take a certain means to that end?
Yes.
And given that it's politics, it's possible that there is only one answer. So, like, if you didn't horse trade this particular military base for this vote, you weren't going to get your thing passed. So that's a circumstance where maybe a biographer can explain why somebody did what they did. But I don't think that's most of human life. And so I guess I still believe that for most people, if you look at their choices, which are not like those most of the time, you're going to need more than just general facts about human nature and humans want to be happy and so on to explain why they did what they did. And it's going to be beyond the powers of a biographer to figure out what that is. So I guess I'm still not convinced by that example or Melville and Whaling and so on that the kind of work that is legit for a biographer can really be done. I mean, really, shouldn't what we be debating is this? Because I thought your position was that actually human beings in a certain way are fairly simple creatures.
Well, I do think I'm more on that side than you are.
Yeah, I think you believe we've got a fairly small number of motivations. And actually, by using those that small set of motivations, we can pretty much explain why people do what they do, right? Like, I think you believe if you want to explain why I became a philosopher, you don't need anything deeper than something like, well, hey, you were in college and you liked philosophy and you were good at it and people like to do what they're good at. And why did you keep doing it? Well, because people need a career and there was a career. And I think you believe that something like that explains most of human action. Is that not right?
I think that would be too pat way of putting it. But I'm certainly closer to that than you are.
Uh-huh.
When it comes to biography, I think we have to think about the question of, you know, what kind of lives are actually worth writing a biography about? And so when you said that my example of Johnson was too tailored to my position, I do think that, you know, I could not pretend to explain why you became a philosopher. Right, I mean, and why Johnson became a politician rather than a businessman or something like that. I mean, but once he's a politician, once you're a philosopher, you've taken on a certain role in life. And these roles have ends. So I think that, you know, one could write the career of Alex Racy as a philosopher somewhat more persuasively than answering the question about why you became a philosopher in the first place. Because then you would see that you started developing certain questions, which led to more some answers and more questions, and you expand in your interests in certain ways. And, you know, I'm not sure that any of that is extraordinarily difficult to understand. And now, if you were a very famous philosopher, I think you could be sometime.
I like, you know, that we both laughed when you said that.
Well, you know, if you were Bertrand Russell or something, then I mean, I think that kind of a life is explainable in some way, because the philosopher has a certain role, especially in modern culture, and so the ends are kind of given once you've taken on that role, and then it's largely about the means. And so this to me is why it's very valid to write a biography of somebody like Mandela or Churchill, because they're in a definite role that has pretty clear ends. And then the means often can be established on the basis of the situations they were in and the motives of other people they were involved with and so on.
Well, okay, so your position's coming into a little more focus. I mean, I think, If I'm hearing you correctly, you believe that, so first of all, once people have chosen their ends, in general, whether they're famous or not, their lives become a little more explicable.
Yes.
And also, in connection with that, you believe that the kind of people we write biographies about, you know, they tend to be sort of grand characters with grand ends, and perhaps it's even easier to explain what they do. But so here's a little bit of pushback even on that, which is that, you know, the picture that you've just laid out sounds a little bit almost deterministic to me, right? Like, you're willing to admit that it's hard to explain why people choose their roles and their goals, but you think, well, once they do it, then, you know, that's what they're going to do their life. And we now only have to explain why they take certain means to those ends. But I mean, people have freedom, to state the obvious, right? And they can change their goals. And, you know, there are people who are very similar to these famous figures who didn't do what they do, didn't pursue them single-mindedly. You know, so even take me, right? Yeah, I chose to be a philosopher, and I stayed a philosopher. But I have friends who didn't and pursued different careers. And so I'm not sure you can treat the end as fixed, right? So yeah, Martin Luther King was willing to risk his life in order to achieve his civil rights goals and to give up on enormous other things he could have done with his life and enormous aspects of his personal life, but other people weren't. And so we can't just take that as a fixed end. We have to know why he essentially kept making that choice, because I don't think once you make it, you're done. So this is why I don't think we can escape some harder level of discussion about why people do what they do.
I do have this feeling that you make the choices more complicated than they have to be. That once you are in a role and you've gotten attention for it and you've defined yourself, it's just not that hard to switch and say, I don't care about that anymore. Some people do it. but I'm not sure we need a minute by minute new explanation for why King kept deciding to do the things he was doing. I do think that these roles and goals do have a powerful shaping aspect. I don't think you have to be an absolute determinist to think that's the case.
I see what you're saying. I mean, I feel like, well, maybe this is a way of drawing it out of you. Part of what interests me about this is that, of course, traditionally, many people will say that one of the great things about reading literature, and you're a literature professor.
I am.
Is that it...
I confess that I've never concealed my professorship of literature. Many people
say that a great thing about literature is it allows you to experience a person's mind at a level of detail that you normally can't with a real person, right? And people present it as though literature, fictional literature we're talking about here, is what finally allows you to see the human mind in all its complexity. And so I'm kind of interested in the fact that you love fiction and literature, and this is what many people say is great about fiction, but I sort of feel like that can't be what you, John Farrell, are getting out of fiction, because you believe that the human mind is pretty simple and straightforward in some ways, right?
Yeah,
a really challenging way to put it would be, don't you read fiction and feel like it's all pretty phony? Because authors typically try to give really elaborate explanations of why characters do what they do, and it's tied into their childhood and so on. So why is it that you as a literature professor don't read fiction and think, oh, this is terrible, right? What we need is fiction written in a more simplistic way.
The young John Farrell would have said complexity is the key to literature.
Uh-huh.
That's true. I would have said that more as a young person. And now I don't think that is actually the case. I think that what people should say along that line is that what literature offers you is a view of people and life and actions in a way that is more certain than you ever get in human life. So when the author tells you Lanford Strether was waiting for Maria Gostrey in the train station and he felt anxious because he could not remember X about her, well, you know that for certain in a way that you never do in about anybody in ordinary life.
So the distinction here is fiction should not be giving you more complexity, it should be giving you more certainty.
Well, I think that people, when people think that literature has a special quality, that really is the thing that they are responding to. There may be more detail, there is more detail, but all the detail, when it's coming from a reliable narrator, which is not always the case, right? But when it's coming from a reliable narrator, that you have real certainty. And then also, literature tends to specialize in those kinds of moments and situations where character is absolutely queer. For instance, in the moment of death, or in the moment of great struggle and trial and pain, and so on. When you see those things in a work of literature, and in life, you get to see what people really are. Right? You get a deeper insight into their character. When you see someone behaving very bravely in a fight or something and saving somebody else.
In a real one, you
mean. In a real one, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't say, oh yeah, he jumps in and saves somebody who's going down the rapids, but he's not really a brave guy. You can't say that, right? Their character is absolutely revealed. And that's why literature tends to dwell on those things. It's not just that they're exciting, they are exciting, that's part of it, but it's also that those are really revealing moments where you can't say, you don't any longer know about the character. So literature satisfies our hunger for deep knowledge of character because in many kinds of works, we have reliable information about them, both in terms of the narrator's information that we can't doubt, because there's no way of doubting the author's narrator, or it's because literature gravitates towards situations which provide us with that kind of clarity, because they're intense. So, you know, there are some authors in the modern world who are particularly interested in psychological complexity. That's one of the things the novel can try to do, but I don't think it's as central as the people you're citing make it out to be. And the authors who do it, the famous authors who do it, especially Marcel Proust and Henry James. Mm-hmm. The complaint you can make about them, Mouzeau also, the complaint you can make about them is that, well, we've read 3,000 pages of Marcel, and we know how he feels and thinks about everything, but we have no idea how he'd behave in any situation. We have no idea what it would be like to be with him in a room. So that kind of complexity actually goes against one of the classic pleasures of literature.
You got a lot tied up inside. And a boy that just won't fight. Baby, it's a grind. And this your bitter life, where nothing just won't do. The girl pleads, the woman needs a wedding ring.